Let There Be Light. From Flashbangs and Frag Grenades. By Calchexis. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on League of Legends by Riot Games. Chapter 14. Cleanup. Caitlin picked her way through the mud and debris of the warehouse with Vi at her back. Whatever had happened here, things must have gone catastrophically wrong. Piltover was already up in arms over the lack of water. Reserves from the dams were being diverted for drinking water, but the whole city was parched, and it wouldn't take long for the wealthy people of Piltover to riot over the matter. There was a certain irony to that, Caitlin thought, given how many basic necessities the City of Progress had denied Zaun. Now that they were in that same position, the first word on everyone's lips was civil unrest, almost willfully ignorant of how Zaun's actions in an identical situation had brought admonitions from those same lips. But then equality was never what it was about. It was about being better, having more. That was always what Progress had meant in the end, even if it had taken so many tragedies for her to see it the way that Vi seemingly always had. "What do you think happened?" Vi asked as she knelt in the middle of what had once been a warehouse and wiped away a sluice of mud. "Listen," Caitlin admitted. "But I think they walked into a trap." She turned to survey the area. "The food is gone, though, so..."
"Mom, we got bodies!"
Caitlin turned sharply at the call and moved toward the waving counter relief crew, and Vi was right beside her. The first search had turned up a half dozen cadre guards that had been tossed about and snapped like dry timber. But initial reports suggested they'd already been dead when the storm took them. The cadre trainees in the camp weren't so lucky. Hundreds had been killed by raining debris driven by winds strong enough to tear the walls of the warehouse to shreds. It had left so many corpses behind that now the only things worth calling out for were if you found someone lucky enough to have survived. The only bodies worth calling out at this point would be enemies.
"Show me,"
Caitlin ordered as she met up with the relief. Their brass and blue combat gear disrupted at the left bicep by the white bandana of a relief medic.
"Here."
He was a young man barely out of his teens, and he looked as though he'd thrown up about twice at this point. He led them to what was most certainly not a body. It was at best a quarter of a body. It was the upper part of someone's torso, with the head only mostly intact. And even Vi made a noise behind her at the sight of it. Caitlin was all out of noises to make. She'd made them all on her way through the camp. With that said, this body was particularly gruesome.
"Solnite," Caitlin said quietly.
"Damn fucking trenches," the medic snarled, then winced as he looked over at Vi, who was giving him a cold, deadly glare.
"No, offense, ma'am."
"Right," Vi said in a flat voice as she looked back to Caitlin and asked,
"How the fuck did this happen?"
"I don't know," Caitlin replied, then leaned in and moved some of the ragged, mud-stained clothing away to examine the wound.
"They were clearly dead before the wind got them," she said. "The cuts are almost surgical. This could only have been one of ours."
She looked up at the medic and asked, "Were there any specialist deployments in the area?"
"No, ma'am, not that I know of,"
the medic said. Before she could ask any more questions, they were interrupted by the click and tromp of well-ordered boots, and Vi knocked two knuckles lightly against her back. Vi stood quickly and scowled as she found herself, Vi, and the medic rapidly and efficiently surrounded by masked, armed, and armored Clan Pharos operators. And a moment later, someone began jostling them from behind in an attempt to get through.
Pardon me, step aside or I'll bisect you, thank you.
One of the operators moved out of the way and Ren Gleamspire appeared in his place, fresh-faced and dressed neatly in starched brass and blues.
"Good morning, Brigadier,"
she saluted crisply.
"Clan Pharos is taking over this site. Your MPs are being redeployed to Piltover. We've still got a lot of cleanup to do."
"Hold on, this is police jurisdiction, not clan," Caitlin argued.
I can't just let you dismiss me without an order. I outrank you, warrant officer.
Of course.
Wren was still smiling as she drew out a thin, creamy envelope and passed it over.
Directly from the council.
Caitlin's stomach dropped as she took the envelope and flipped it open, drew out the parchment and scanned it. Sure enough, it was signed and dated orders for redeployment to interior Piltover while the clan handled the exterior.
I see,
Caitlin said quietly, lowering the parchment and sharing a look with Vi, who was keeping admirably stone-faced. Looking back to Wren, she said,
Is there anything you need from us before we depart, Officer Gleamspar?
Not that I can think of, Wren replied. Then leaned in conspiratorially and said,
However, clan intelligence suggests that this was an inside job. MPs were responsible for parts of security, so I'd appreciate it if you could comb through your ledgers for any potential sympathizers.
Caitlin locked her jaw, grit her teeth, and said,
I'll do that.
Wren gave her a sympathetic smile.
Thank you. I know that nobody wants to believe that one of their own could turn coat like this, she said. Some people are just damaged, though.
Couldn't agree more, Vi said from behind her.
Fortunately, the clan detected it and deployed a countermeasure. Isn't that wonderful? She said brightly.
Now Caitlin wanted to vomit.
Yes, quite.
She forced out in what she hoped was a thoroughly patriotic grimace.
Now I ought to start mobilizing my MPs, Officer Good Hunting.
You as well, Brigadier,
Wren said, snapping another salute before turning to start haranguing the silent guard she'd come in with to get to work. Surprisingly, Vi managed to get all the way out of earshot of them, and then some before she went on a quiet, hissing tirade of Gutlau curses. Caitlin didn't actually understand anything she was saying, but she learned a long time ago from being in the melting pot city of Piltover that curses sounded fairly universal regardless of the language they were spoken in.
We fucked them,
Vi hissed as soon as they were far enough away from any Cadre or MPs.
Fucked them, Cupcake.
We didn't know,
Caitlin replied, then added,
We couldn't have known.
Vi pressed the heels of her palms against her face and shudders racked through her. And Caitlin laid a hand on her shoulder, offering what meager comfort she could. It had all gone so wrong. Her plan had been simple, and yet she had thought the tracks had been covered too well to be traced. Perhaps they had been covered well enough to keep herself and Vi in the clear too, but she had obviously missed something. This was her fault.
They got the food, though, Caitlin said.
A thread of the tension that had been strung taut within Vi seemed to slacken as she lowered her hands and said,
You sure about that? There were faint scorch marks on the concrete flooring of the warehouse under all the mud and rain.
Caitlin moved in front of Vi and laid a hand on her cheek. And Vi looked up at her miserably.
And there wasn't nearly enough debris in the warehouse to account for all the crates that had been stored. I'm sure they got the food.
Sighing, Vi nodded and carted her fingers messily through her hair before saying,
They're never going to trust us again.
Nor should they, Caitlin said.
We can't afford to do something like this again, either. Camille is clearly too careful. I'd never trust that any information I turned up wasn't planted.
She then pressed her lips to a thin line and said,
Not anymore, anyway.
So what? Vi asked, her voice taking on a hollow timbre.
We just gotta watch Piltover kill off Zahn piece by piece?
She gave a bitter laugh, then said,
Maybe we should have taken your dad's offer and fucked off to Ionia after all.
Caitlin wrapped her arms around Vi and pulled her close, and Vi's arms went around her, too. For a long moment they remained there, listening to the faint susurration of background activity as the Cadre Belief sieved through the remains of the flash storm to turn up the bodies of the young Cadre cadets of the 14th Training Regiment. What had happened last night was a tragedy. It ought to have been simple and nearly bloodless, but instead hundreds had died, and tensions had risen impossibly. And it was her fault.
We can.
Caitlin whispered.
But I'm going to be an awful woman and a worse wife.
and I'm going to ask you to stay.
Why?
Vi asked.
Just in case,
Caitlin replied as she bowed her head and buried her face against Vi's soft pink hair before saying,
I'm asking you to stay and endure seeing everything Piltover will do just in case. If there is a moment that comes that we can do something, anything, to change the tides for the better, then we will have to be here.
If it's going to be like that, why not just... Vi trailed off, then sighed.
Yeah, no, never mind.
Caitlin nodded as if she said the words all the same, though. Why not just join Zahn? Because no one down there would ever trust them if they tried. Because after this fiasco, there would always be the question. And that's if they weren't killed on sight, which they might very well be. And Caitlin wouldn't even blame them. It wasn't just that, though. There were still good people in Piltover. People who had been misled into a war of attrition that would be longer and bloodier than anyone on the council wanted to believe. The only sitting members who might have had a grasp were Jace, who had been neatly if quietly sidelined, and Melma Darda, ever the opportunist, who had clearly chosen a side in the conflict.
We still have a city to protect, Caitlin said after a moment.
Two cities, Vi corrected her. As often and as well as we can.
Even if it's never often enough, Caitlin replied.
It never would be. Not really. All they could do now was stand their ground and watch as Piltover was dragged inexorably into a horrifying war for the sake of the mad and the wealthy. The people would bleed for the sake of coin and hatred, and they would be told that it was in the name of justice and in the name of righteousness and in the name, of course, of progress. Lux's hands were shaking as she wrung out the washcloth in the basin of cool water that Chuck had refilled a few hours ago, then carefully rolled it up before turning to Jinx and brushing sweat-matted blue strands from her face and laying the cold cloth across her fevered brow. Jinx twitched as the cloth touched her skin, but otherwise remained as rigid and cataleptic as she had been when Echo had brought her home 4 days ago. Since then, Lux had hardly left her side, bathing her, cleaning her, feeding her spoonfuls of watery gruel in as much as she could. The medic that Renata had sent to look in on her had given up after Jinx's muscle spasms had snapped 3 IV needles made of progressively more durable materials. In the end, they had been forced to rely on manual means of feeding her. It was a good thing that Jinx already functioned off of very little food. Something about her unique chemhancement had rendered her incredibly efficient. A series of controlled mutations had turned her into a near-perfect predator capable of subsisting on substances that would kill most anyone else. She still needed to eat something, though, and Lux refused to let anyone do it but herself. She all but chased everyone from the room if they came near, save for a very few. The hours were beginning to wear on her, though. She had barely slept since Jinx had been brought back. Something awful had happened. Something that not even Lux could properly explain. Jinx had somehow channeled magic. But as near as Lux could tell, whatever that magic was had not played nice with the shimmer in her body. Singed had examined her and announced that were she anyone else, she would probably have been dead. That it was only her shimmer regeneration that was keeping her alive at that point. That, he suggested, was why she was comatose. Her body had, in essence, shut down absolutely everything else in an effort to survive. But that body needed fuel. So Lux let out a shaky sigh as she turned to pick up the latest bowl of tepid gruel and brought a half spoonful to Jinx's lips, which were pressed flatly shut.
Jinx, sweetie, I need you to relax a little so I can get the spoon in, please,
Lux said shakily. There was no response. There never was.
Jinx, please,
Lux said, and her voice shook and cracked.
Please relax or open your eyes or something.
Her hand had started shaking so badly that she was about to lose her grip. So she dropped the spoon back into the bowl before sobbing and crying out,
"Please say something!"
Tears fell in hot, fat droplets from her cheeks as she clutched the bowl of gruel and resisted the urge to scream and hurl it against the wall. That wouldn't help anyone, and even with the stolen surplus, food was not so plentiful that even watery gruel could be wasted.
"Please wake up,"
Jinx pleaded.
"Please."
A hand settled on her shoulder, and Lux startled as she looked up into the soft, sympathetic eyes of Seraphine Arctura, who said nothing, but took the bowl from Lux's shaking hands, set it on the floor, then stepped close to pull Lux into a gentle hug. Lacking any dignity or shame left, Lux accepted it as she buried her face against Seraphine's chest and sobbed her misery out against the younger woman.
"She's still in there," Seraphine assured her. "Distant, but she's there. I can hear her."
Those assurances had been the only thing keeping Lux sane over the past 48 hours.
Is she getting closer?"
Lux asked tearfully. Seraphine shook her head.
"No," she said softly. "But she's not fading away either. I think she's just resting. Recovering, maybe?"
As terrible of an answer as that was, it wasn't the worst news. And she appreciated that Seraphine wasn't trying to lie to her or spare her feelings. So long as Jinx was still alive, there was hope. So long as she was breathing and living, then she could always come back. And Lux had to believe that that was what would happen. After all, Jinx had promised to come back.
"Thank you,"
Lux said quietly as she pulled away. Then a little more evenly said, "I'm surprised we're not to let you out of your cage again so soon."
"I may have threatened to shout half the headquarters apart if she didn't," Seraphine said meekly. For which Lux was immensely thankful.
She had been at the edge of her sanity when Renata had come to check in on her Chemlord's status 2 days ago.
"Does Singed have a prognosis?"
Renata asked flatly.
"No," Lux replied without looking away from Jinx's strained features. She was afraid if she looked Renata in the eye, she might kill the damn woman. Renata made a quiet noise of annoyance, then said,
"Pity. She has work to do, and I cannot stall the Chem Barons forever. Eventually, they will start asking where their Chem Lord is."
"I will feed Baron Grime his own prosthetic jaw, if he so much as breathes in Jinx's direction," Lux said as she reached out and stroked Jinx's cheek.
"I'd sell tickets to that show,"
Renata replied. "You could at least try to show some compassion, Renata. I know you're capable of it," Seraphine said as she walked in from the living room. Their bedroom wasn't tiny precisely, but it was at the mercy of Zahn being a relatively cramped place to begin with, so three people certainly made it a little more than cozy. Lux was raising her head to ask both of them to leave before she lost her temper completely when Seraphine turned suddenly and locked eyes onto Jinx, and whatever Lux had been about to say died in her throat as Seraphine casually said,
"Oh, I can still hear her."
What came out of Lux instead was a miserable little hiccup as she turned back to her wife and made several extremely ugly noises around her tears, before burying her face against Jinx's sweaty shoulder.
"Oh, lovely,"
Renata drawled. Lux heard a muffled thwack and Seraphine saying in a chiding voice, "Don't be like that. You almost went into conniptions when I collapsed from mana exhaustion back at the pump, and someone offered to carry me for you."
"You exaggerate."
"You threatened to extract his liver and then sell it back to him if he touched me."
"Enough!" Lux snapped, looking up at the both of them, although only Seraphine had the good grace to look ashamed. "If you two are going to have a lover's spat, then do it elsewhere. I have a wife to tend to." Renata had given Lux the coldest, darkest glare that she'd ever seen the older woman wear, but Lux didn't look away. She had been glared at by worse, not much worse. It was definitely in the top three glares she'd ever gotten,
None of that mattered in the face of Jinx still being in there.
Let's go, please, Seraphine said,
putting her hand on Renata's flesh arm, and Lux didn't miss the minute ripple of relaxation that flowed out from Seraphine's touch.
Magic, maybe.
More likely, it was something more mundane. They began to leave, but before they did, Lux called out, saying,
Sarah, wait, can you come back soon? Just to check and see.
Seraphine turned to her and smiled faintly as she said,
Of course.
We'll talk about that,
Renata said before laying a hand on the small of Seraphine's back and gently but firmly guiding her out of the room.
Here.
Seraphine picked up the bowl of gruel and handed it back to Lux, then moved around to the other side of the bed.
I'll massage the muscles around her jaw. It might help you feed her.
Lux nodded and scooted a little closer as she scooped out a bit of the meal while Seraphine reached around Jinx's face and gently began massaging the muscles. It took almost half a minute for Jinx's jaw to go slack, but Lux took advantage of it. She tipped the gruel in, then moved to massage Jinx's throat to make sure it went down. They did that for almost 2 hours, bit by bit until they finally got through the whole bowl. It was the most Lux had managed to get into her at any one time.
Thank you,
Lux said quietly as she set the bowl aside.
It's okay to ask for help, Seraphine said. No one will think less of you.
It's not that, Lux replied, shaking her head. Seraphine sighed softly, then nodded. It wasn't that Lux didn't want help, it was a matter of trust. She trusted Chuck to an extent, as well as Jericho. She trusted Echo, but he hadn't been able to come by at all due to the demands for food. His firelights were the only thing keeping some wards from descending into riots over the rationing. It was better than it had been, but now that there was food in the city, everyone wanted more than everyone else. There were precious few that Lux felt worthy of her trust, and fewer still that she felt worthy of being around Jinx when she was this vulnerable. Seraphine had, surprisingly, become one of those people. She settled in on the other side of the bed, her eyes fixed softly on Jinx's face, and said,
I used to hear stories about her.
What kind? Lux asked.
Mostly horror stories,
Seraphine admitted with a small smile. They called her a monster and a madwoman.
Murderer at best, or sometimes terrorist.
Lux shrugged and said,
None of those are strictly inaccurate.
She's so much more than that, though.
She is.
Lux reached out and took Jinx's hand, lacing their fingers together. And Jinx's fingers curled tightly around hers.
She's my everything.
And I know she'll come back, Seraphine said. I wish I could use my magic to speed it along, but magic is what did this, and I'm afraid... They had already discussed that at length and even consulted Singe to end forbidden, point blank, any magical influence. Shimmer, he had said, tended to react very explosively to the arcane. The sole exception had been the variant fortifying tincture of shimmer he had made for Victor once upon a time. Although according to Victor, even that much had not exactly reacted positively.
Whatever flows through Jinx's veins is endlessly mutating her. Adapting her. It will not accept outside change anymore.
That had been Singed's final word on the matter. And although she did not trust the man himself, she did trust in his knowledge and in his vested interest in preserving Jinx's life. Lux had once asked him why he cared so much, and his answer had been simple and strange.
Because the mutation must survive.
She'll wake up, Lux said firmly. I have faith. Seraphine nodded, then said,
You really love her, don't you?
More than I'll ever have words for, Lux said as tears threatened to comprise what little integrity she'd regained.
More than life, more than death, more than all that is golden.
What does that mean?
I don't know,
Lux said honestly, but it feels right to say.
And it did.
It was strange, but the words came so easily to her lips,
What about you?
Seraphine frowned as she said, What about me?
Do you love Renata?
She went rigid at that, then looked away stiffly. Curiously, though, she didn't immediately say no, which was what Lux had expected. Whether or not that statement was true was immaterial, but she had at least expected a denial. Instead, Seraphine seemed to grow very distant as she unconsciously flattened non-existent wrinkles in her skirts and stared at the wall.
I'm sorry, you don't have to answer that, Locke said after a moment.
Don't be, it's not your fault, Seraphine said.
Renata is... She's not an easy woman to love, then said. That's too easy at the same time.
Then... Seraphine shrugged, then said, She's in a lot of pain, and she inflicts that pain on others. I'm not an idiot. Renata is not, and probably never will be, a good woman, but she's not as bad as people think.
She looked over at Jinx, then back up at Lux, and there was a distant ache in her eyes as she added, And I'm well aware of the differences between us. You don't need to say it.
I wasn't going to, Lux said honestly. Considering my own marriage, I don't feel like I have room to criticize anyone for having odd tastes.
That got a little snort of tired laughter from Seraphine.
It's just hard not to feel so much for her, she continued. Because she feels so much about everything.
She laughed bitterly at that and shook her head. And her long pink locks fell raggedly over her face.
She hates herself as much, if not more, than she hates Piltover. She feels every injustice and every death, even ones that she inflicts. Maybe especially those ones.
Lux lifted Jinx's knuckles to her lips and pressed a kiss to them before saying,
When I first met Jinx, I was living a lie. I had been pretending for so long that I had forgotten what it was like not to pretend. I had forgotten what it was like to be me.
She kissed Jinx's fingers again, then added,
I wasn't even sure if there was a me left under all of that.
What changed? Seraphine asked.
It was Jinx, Lux admitted. She saw me for who and what I was instantly. She saw every neurosis and broken piece, and against all odds and reason, decided that it was love at first sight.
That's weirdly romantic. Seraphine said with a weak laugh.
Shaking her head, Lux said, That wasn't my point.
Then looked up at Seraphine and said,
My point is that I fell in love with her too because she saw me for who I was and I realized how badly I wanted to be that person. And she was willing to do anything to make that happen.
Lux looked back down at Jinx, at those thin lips and all the little scars, and fell in love all over again.
She just wanted me to be me.
That was your point? Seraphine asked, raising an eyebrow.
My point, Lux said, looking up, is that in my humble opinion, love is about being with the person who wants you to be who you most truly are.
Seraphine looked oddly struck, as if she'd been flicked across the nose a little too hard, and then laughed hollowly before turning away from Lux and looking out towards the door and asking,
Do you think I'm an angry person, Lux? In my heart, I mean.
Of course I do, Lux said as kindly as she could.
And Seraphine snapped her attention back to Lux as if she'd been slapped.
Why?
Lux hummed thoughtfully, then said, Let me ask you this.
And she gestured out towards Billowa and Zaun at large.
They're all being trodden on and stolen from and abused and used, and until now, they've been given no hope and no reason to believe that hope would ever come.
Then she looked back at Seraphine and asked,
Doesn't that make you angry?
Seraphine lowered her head, looking pensive, then said,
Of course it does. Doesn't it make you angry?
Not really, Lux admitted. And Seraphine's expression darkened.
You forget, she said, that I participated in the oppression of my own people.
Mages are second or third class citizens in their own country, and I slaughtered them as often as anyone else.
How could you?
Seraphine breathed.
It's literally what they made me for, Lux replied.
So the answer to that would be surprisingly easily. She looked back down at Jinx and smiled. Demacia broke me, melted me down, and molded me into a beast. Not a hunter, but a beast. They did it so I would always be alone and isolated because... Tears fell from her cheeks as she touched Jinx's lips gently. Who could ever love a beast? Seraphine's expression softened at that, and she looked away before saying, I forget myself sometimes. My family wasn't wealthy growing up, but I was happy. We were happy. I forget that's not universal. It's not, but that's not your fault, Lux said, then said, But that's my point, you know. I do this because Jinx wants me to, and I would do anything for Jinx. She leaned in and pressed a kiss to Jinx's lips, then sat up and asked, So why are you doing this? The moment stretched like a worn thread, ragged and weary, and Seraphine became so quiet that Lux thought she could hear the creak of Jinx's clenching jaw, before finally breaking that silence by saying, Because I'm angry. Because it makes me so angry. Lux nodded, then asked, Why did you want to know? Again, Seraphine fell silent, but this time she looked less tense and more just distant. That pensiveness was back, and then she sighed and said, Because one of the first things Renata told me when I agreed to stay with her was that she trusted me because I was angry like her. And at the time, I agreed with her, but... But you didn't really believe it yourself, Lux offered. I didn't want to, Seraphine admitted. I don't want to be angry, but I think she's right. I think I'm very angry, and what's worse is that I know that she wants me to be angry. Is that bad? I don't know, Seraphine said. But it feels like it should be bad, you know? She looked over at Lux and said, Do you think it's okay to be in love with someone who wants you to be angry? Do you think it's okay to be in love with someone who doesn't care if you're insane? Lux countered. Seraphine looked taken aback for a moment, then looked down at Jinx briefly before laughing and looking back up. I guess that's fair, she said. Jinx can't really help it, though, can she? No, Lux replied, then said. But I wasn't talking about Jinx. It took a few seconds for that statement to sink in, but when it did, Seraphine rocked back a little. She stared at Lux for a long time as if she were trying to hear something very distant. At some point, she must have managed it because her eyes widened, and when they did, Lux smiled at her for real. Seraphine had always been pale, most Zonites were, even those that lived topside. But now she was bloodless, so for her sake, Lux stopped smiling and said, I may not be the right person to talk about this, but if you ask me, I think that life is a very terrible thing most of the time. And that love is one of the very few good things about it. She reached out and took Seraphine's hand and was a little surprised to find Seraphine allowed her to do that and said, Just remember that love isn't always a pretty thing. Sometimes love is bloody and sometimes it's mean. And sometimes it doesn't look anything like you think love ought to look. Sometimes love is just finding someone with matching scars. Do you think I should love Renata? Seraphine asked quietly. Lux shrugged, then said, I don't know. Do you think Renata wants you to be you? I think she wants me to be angry. And are you angry?
Yes.
Then I guess the rest is up to you, Lux said. At that, Seraphine nodded. Then she squeezed Lux's hand before letting go, standing up, brushing her skirts flat again. She made to leave, but paused at the door to look back, and Lux met her gaze evenly as Seraphine asked, How long have you known?
No more.
That you're insane. Lux shrugged, then smiled and said,
Since Jinx told me back in Demacia that the thing she liked best about me was that I was the only one in the world crazier than her. Seraphine chuckled, then said, "You two really are perfect for each other."
"I know,"
Lux replied with a grin. "Thank you, by the way, for coming back."
"Thank you for being my friend,"
Seraphine said with an oddly wan smile. And then she left, and Lux turned back to Jinx and began humming softly as she stroked her long, electric blue hair. She would wake up, and Lux had a feeling it would be soon. She wasn't sure where the feeling came from, only that it was there. Jinx would be back. She always came back.
The text of this story is available on AO3. Music by Dot Matrix. If you would like me to record a story, voice over a character, get in touch using the contact information available on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as a link to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.